Welcome to Caribbean Mystics Podcast,
where we marry mysticism, superstition, and lore. I'm your host, Paulina.
And I'm your host, Gabrielle. And we are your resident Caribbean mystics.
Join us today as we explore the depths of real supernatural stories.
Told by real people located right in our very own backyard. On today's episode of Caribbean Mystics Podcast, Paulina Crickey shares one of the most prolific legends in the Virgin Islands. A story rife with mystery, adventure, and speculation. A story about hidden treasure that rumor has may still be waiting to be found.
Host and help produce a podcast about paranormal encounters, and it's funny because I've never had a paranormal experience of my own, but I'm absolutely fascinated about the subject. I think it has to do with the bedtime stories my dad would tell me about our family. All my life, I was told, you are Crickey. And the name, it's not really known in the States or anywhere else in the world, but in the Caribbean, it's recognized a lot, especially in the Virgin Islands. We're also a pretty large family, so there's quite a few of us here. But my branch of the family had its own stories and legends. The name, though, was an entity of itself. People would often talk to me and they'd be like, oh, well, you don't sound like you're from the Caribbean. You don't look like you're from the Caribbean. And then I tell them my name and it was like some magic key unlocked the door to acceptance. I used to hate it and sometimes it still bugs me, but now I really don't care as much. I challenge the status quo. I don't fit in everyone's perfect little box of what they think Caribbean people are like or look like. And I know I'm not alone in that. We were just one of the old families that have been here for a really long time. Over 300 years, actually. The biggest thing that the Creekies are known for in the Virgin Islands is our family legend. As a little girl, my dad would tell me bedtime stories about our family. They were the things of fairy tales and books. He'd tell me the story about my grandfather's encounters with Jumbies at Lindbergh Bay, about my great-grandmother's omens predicting a death in the family. But the most prominent one of all was about my great-great-grandfather, Henry O'Creakey. From what I can remember, one day he was fishing out on the outskirts of Norman Island in the British Virgin Islands. The weather had turned for the worse and it began to rain. So he gathered his gear on his little boat and he headed toward the island to find some shelter. There were three caves on the edge of Norman Island and he found one big enough to fit his boat inside and waited out the storm. As he was sitting in his boat, he noticed something glistening towards the top of the cave. You see, the tide was higher than usual that day, and he was able to gain access to a hidden platform. He investigated a little further, climbed out of his boat, and he came upon several shining coins, Spanish doubloons, pirate's treasure. He hauled his findings, and when the storm cleared, he headed back home with his loot. So I would always ask my dad at that point, so what happened to the treasure? What did he do with it? Well, my dad would say, nobody really knows. Some say that he bought up several properties in the Virgin Islands. Some say he invested half and buried the rest, and no one knows where. There's rumors to this day that it's buried back on Norman Island, but most people believe that it's buried underneath Creaky's Alley, where my great-grandparents used to live. But what my dad would say is that the treasure could only appear to a Creaky in a dream. Me being the 8-year-old little girl that I am, I was so excited to hear that, to know that I could be the one that could find this treasure. Maybe he just said that to get me to go to sleep that night. I actually did have a dream, and I was flying over Norman Island, and I felt like I was being pulled to this secret location on a little beach, and there was just this knowing feeling of, that's where it is. That's where the treasure is. Of course, this could just be residue from the night before, but I didn't want to believe that. As I grew up, I started to notice that this was more than just a bedtime story. I remember going on a school field trip to Norman Island, and the tour guides started retelling my story, my dad's bedtime story. My friends were screaming and pointing me out to everybody on the boat, like, that's her family. That was my first taste of realizing that it was common knowledge around the island. A few years later, I was bartending at a restaurant, just making conversation with a patron. And when I mentioned my last name, he was like, wait, you're that family. Your family is the reason why I'm here. I'm looking for that treasure. And apparently, he was a legit treasure hunter. He brought all his gear down, was planning on scuba diving under a waterfront. I was just like, just in awe that this had gone around to actual people that were taking it serious enough to invest and look for it. I had relatives search on Norman Island with metal detectors, and we'd revisit the old sea caves and have a search for ourselves. But of course, nothing ever came up. No one knows what happened to this bounty. But one thing for sure is that my great-great-grandfather afterwards immigrated from Anegada to St. Thomas and had purchased Norman Island and an alley downtown called Creaky's Alley today, and the Marine Slip on Hassel Island, and the island of Little St. James, aka Epstein's Island, and other properties. Other family members would debate, though, that this fortune had come from his work in Anegada with his father salvaging ships. You know, back then, you could salvage those ships and take them apart and sell all the pieces, brass and copper, whatever those ships entailed. And so they said that that's how he made his fortune. It wasn't from this treasure. He was just enormously successful at business and finding ways to attain money. This story is known in the community. It's online, it's in books, it's told on tour guides. It's said to be the inspiration behind Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island. So it's gotta have some merit to it, right? The legend and the rumors still live on, 4 generations later. I mean, how many people can say that they actually have legit family legends? It's just crazy. These legends and stories that have been passed down from generation to generation and explores all the islands. It's just something that just shaped me as a person growing up, and have some pride on where I'm from and where my family is from and still is currently is one of the factors that has definitely propelled me to want to start this podcast, not just to share my story, but to share other people's story, to share other families' stories, to share Caribbean stories. We are a small but mighty region. You know what I mean? I want us to have a platform, me and Gabrielle both, for Caribbean people to share that pride and interesting stories with the world. Because they're missing out, you know?
Welcome, welcome, everybody. My name is Gabrielle, and I am your co-host.
Hi, this is Paulina here, as you heard from my story.
Before we get into the discussion of Paulina's story, which is incredible, and there's so much, there's so much that we could get into, I just want to say that it's really crazy how this is our last episode of season one. I am absolutely floored.
Me too. This is it, guys. This is last episode, but it doesn't mean forever because we are prepping for season two.
Yes, yes, yes. And while we are taking a very brief hiatus, we should be back. I ain't gonna make no false promises, but we should be back like late February, early March. And during this time is a really great opportunity to catch up on the episodes you may have missed. Please share these episodes with your friends and family. Put it up on all the Facebook groups whenever people are looking for entertaining things to do or listen to, or interested in supporting small local businesses. We are, in fact, a small local business. Just remember, your dear friends here at Caribbean Mystics Podcast.
Yeah, we're also looking for sponsors. So if you're interested in being a sponsor and having your business advertised on our show, reach out to us as well. Our email, CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. And of course, if you have a story, we'd love to know about it.
Hit us up. And if you are not a business owner, but you are still interested in supporting in any way possible, we are accepting donations. That way we can fund travels to other islands to collect stories and upgrade some of our equipment that's a little bit older. So yeah, there's also options for that as well. Our Venmo is going to be Gabrielle-Carrard. And if you don't have a Venmo, reach out to us and we'll give you another option for donation. Anyway, without further ado, I really want to jump into Paulina's story. Which is very much seated in a lot of truth.
Yeah, let's jump in. I'm getting, you know, I was getting a little nervous talking about it, but I'm ready. It's just that I'm so used to being on the other side of the mic and recording people and asking them their stories. So this was an interesting change for me to kind of interview myself and tell my story. Because now I know what you guys go through, our storytellers. Now I know what you guys feel when you get nervous to tell your stories because you don't know where to start or how to even begin. But yeah, now I feel your perspective on that.
Absolutely. So the first theme that I think is really central in your experience, because I feel like there's a few stories built into one, is this, you know, prolific thing that we've spoken about throughout this theme that we've spoken about throughout the season is oral tradition in the Caribbean and parents and grandparents and elders taking time to pass along these stories to the younger generation. And when we had initially done the recording for this episode, I, as someone who grew up here in the Virgin Islands all my life, had never heard anything about this legend. And it is only in research that I realized, like, oh my gosh, like, this is a big thing. Like, a whole book that is required in the education system in America is literally written on this particular legend that is from the Virgin Islands. And so it's like a big thing, but I just feel like it's not something that is as known as it was for prior generations. And this is why what we do here is so important, because it is that maintaining and
like preserving this information and these stories so that way when the people who have these keys and these codes pass away, we are still able to take this and bear our culture to the next generations coming forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was a big inspiration, like I was saying, for wanting to do this podcast as well, because my family had been one of those families that had an oral tradition and legend that had been passed down and survived through four generations at least. And this is not the only story that we have as well, but we have, it's like books worth of stories, but I wanted to make this episode somewhat concise and focus on the main one. This was the biggest one, though, that had an impression on me as a kid. But we have a lot of offshoot stories as well. But yeah, and I know that I'm not the only family on island, too, that has stories like this. There's multiple old Caribbean family names and that incite certain stories. And I think that's just something within our community that we're kind of like accustomed to, like, oh, you're so-and-so. Oh, I heard about your family. Your family used to do this. But yeah, today, I think the most people that would know about my family's story would be mostly like family and friends. And every once in a while, like I was saying, I would get hit up by random people or strangers, especially people that moved to island because they're fascinated with like pirate culture or pirate lore or stories or just even Caribbean or scuba diving and stuff. A lot of them, tour guides, like a lot of them know and are aware of my family and some of the legends that go on around it.
Did it ever make you feel uncomfortable? Because I feel like this is a very interesting perspective to actually be in, because when you have your own paranormal story or legend, you kind of decide if you want to say that or not. But considering that you were born into something that had already been, you know, very well known about, I could imagine that there may have been times of discomfort or even like feeling like people kind of think they know more about you and where you came from than like you do.
That's such a good point, because, well, I've never been asked that, but when I was younger, I was definitely like, wow, that's so cool. It was something like I felt a lot of pride in, and I still, you know, feel that sense as well. But the older I got, I would get some people that would look at me sideways and be like, oh yeah, your family like thief that treasure and they stole and they
pillaged.
Yeah, like such mixed information. And I'm like, what? Like, where is this coming from? And then I had people that were like super fascinated by it. And it never really bothered me that much. I always felt like it was like kind of cool to share with people. But then I would get people that would judge me a certain way. They'd be like, okay, so you're from like that family. Like you guys must have a ton of money, or you must have all this if you have that. But the truth of the matter is, like, though the Creekies did gain this fortune and this wealth, the family is enormous. So generations down the line, it had been split between from just a few brothers and sisters to 18 shareholders to over 40, 50, you know, grandkids and grandparents. So like it divides over time over those generations as well.
Yeah, you know, I think that this is a byproduct of when you come from a very small community. Everybody knows something about somebody. And so while I'm a Carrard, and that's also a very old last name in the Virgin Islands, and I don't feel like we have any like legends or anything, unless a getting I don't know about, I also feel like there's these preconceived notions about who you are and your upbringing and where you come from. So there's always this perspective of, I find that like a lot of the older last names in the Virgin Islands are also synonymous with wealth. And so it's like, oh, you're a Carrard, your family must have a lot of land. And it's just like, you guys are holding on to like really old constructs around the perceptions of these last names. But everything that you are perceiving is from a very antiquated perspective. Since then, like, people have had, you know, my great-grandfather had a lot of land. But my great-grandfather also had children who had children who had children.
Yeah, that's what I'm
and
saying.
And so, you can't ask me if I have a piece of land now, and the answer is no, okay? So it's just, like, it's it's these old perspectives that continue to follow the last name. And I won't complain either, because there is a lot of benefit to having an older last name in a Virgin Islands specifically. And I feel like this is across the Caribbean, like there's a very clannish way about it and a little bit of elitism, if I have to be honest, because there have been opportunities that I've gotten because of my last name, because somebody knew somebody who knew somebody who knew my family or my grandmother or whatever. I was given special treatments. I was able to cut certain lines. And I think that if people were really real who've had this experience, they'd have to acknowledge that, yes, there are some drawbacks to this last name because people form these perceptions, but there are also really great things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like nepotism is wrong across the board. I feel like I'm sending a convoluted message. Nepotism is wrong across the board. However, it is human nature that when you are the one that is doing the reaping, that you tend to be very grateful for the things that you have, because you have a family that has been in this part of the world for such a long time. They have developed connections within their community, and these connections allow them to be propped up into places and opportunities and, you know, spaces that allow for the continual progression of the family.
Definitely. And, you know, I might even look at that as somewhat of a good thing for island people, because a lot of, I don't want to say like outsiders, but non-ancestral people are moving and coming to our islands more and more and more over time. And it's sad because, you know, a lot of our history is slowly mixing, melting, and disappearing away. And I feel like one of the last thing that's holding us, tying us to our history, is our names. So when someone's like, oh, you're a Francis, or you're a Carrard, or you're whatever old Caribbean name there is, it's that tie that's like, that's right, you have blood hair, your roots run deep hair, and it's like, you're one of us. It's this sense of acceptance, even though I'm constantly misjudged for a statesider or like not being from here and not being, you know, Caribbean at all, which is mildly frustrating. So my last name, I always felt, was like the one thing, it was like an identifier of like, no, like, let me check you, because I do, you know.
I completely understand, and I think that people have a lot of perceptions of what it means or what it should look like to be a West Indian or to be a Virgin Islander. And it's just like, you can, I literally fight on social media every day to God make morning. I just fight on social media with people who are telling me that I am appropriating a Jamaican accent, or or telling me that I'm pretending.
That sentence in general is like, first of all, I'm not even Jamaican. Like, correct. This is not a Jamaican accent.
Literally fighting me down and telling me that I am just pretending and I am trying to get views. And it's just like, you know, I just feel like the people that have the most problems with it are the people who aren't actually from the Virgin Islands and don't even know how to find it on a map.
Yes. Oh my gosh. 10 times. And you know, most of those people, they are just so ignorant. And so it's hard for me to not get frustrated, but I try to look at the other coin and be like, well, then let me educate you. Yes, there are white people in the Caribbean. There are black people in the Caribbean. There are Latin people. There are indigenous people. There are Arabic people. There are literally every, I feel like literally we are the most racially diverse region for how small we are. And not just in skin color too, but also customs and culture and faith.
Yeah, ethnically diverse. There's so many populations in the Caribbean, you know, like you have a big Chinese population in like Jamaica, mm-hmm. who are constantly fighting to be seen as Jamaican, and their family has been there, you know, for hundreds of years. Like some of those Chinese populations came in as indentured servants in like the 1800s.
That's right.
And they are constantly fighting for their acceptance within this region. And it's really crazy because the people that are perpetuating these belief systems are people who are not from that land. And as much as I want to be like, you know, it's Americans that come and they just don't understand that we're ethnically diverse. There's a lot of people in the Caribbean region who look at other islands and have these very like stark perspectives around who's actually from there and who isn't. And it's just like every single island has such a different relationship because of its history and a different relationship with whiteness in general. You know, like in a when we were talking about the Sukunya episode, we were talking about how Frenchies are acknowledged in St. Thomas, but literally right across the waterway are unacknowledged in St. Croix because there's a difference in history. And so even in that small...
I didn't know that.
You know, yeah.
In
St. Croix, they don't really have that large of a French population for it to have... I don't want to say for it to have mattered, but the bulk of the French population came to St. Thomas. And so the idea of a Frenchie when you talk to some Crucians is foreign. And it's not their fault. It's not even a value judgment. It's just like we have a different relationship because of our history. And it, you know, we have to acknowledge that everybody's relationship with different groups of people and the way in which societies and cultures are constructed are going to be different from island to island. And then as the region in whole, as it compared to like America or even South America or Central America.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting conversation. And I find that the more we have this conversation, the more we are able to pull down some of the walls and the very limiting perspectives around who people are and what they look like.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And especially now with internet and everybody has a phone, it's making the world a little bit smaller. You know, if you got to look at the good side of all this social media on internet, it does that for the Caribbean as well. Like it shows each of us can have our own platform. And that's why I think that we wanted to make this platform for Caribbean people of all ethnicities, all types, because we want our voices to be heard. No one else is going to do it for us. So let's do it ourselves, you know?
I completely agree. So another important facet of the story that you shared is that, like I said in the beginning, it's very much steeped in truth. And so I wanted to do some research around this story to see what else I could pull. And I saw that there is a precursor to the story in which your great-great-grandfather mm-hmm. found this treasure. And the story behind that, which I found on multiple sources, indicated that in between the channel of Tortola and St. John, a lot of boats ended up sinking there because there was very much a lot of pirate activity. And so a lot of ships in battle were sank between that channel. And there was a Spanish galleon that was traveling between the channel, and there was a mutiny that occurred on board in which the crew was split in half, and one half of the crew went with half of the gold, which I think was 55,000 gold doubloons or something of that sort. Don't quote me on a number, but I'll put this information down in the show notes below. And then they took it. They sailed to Norman Island and they decided that they were going to bury it, like, you know, hide it to go back for it. And then once they had it, they were in their celebratory mode that like, yeah, we, you know, we jump ship. We have the goal. We heading out. They went to Tortola for an evening of fun. And as we know, two can't keep a secret. So they go to Tortola. They're drinking. Secret get out. And it travels around Tortola. And so planters from Tortola ended up going to Norman Island and doing some excavation to see how they could find the treasure. And then here is where you see the story diverge. You see some schools of thought saying that they did in fact find the treasure. And then the local government seized it from the planters when they realized that they had in fact found the treasure. And then there was another school of thought where they didn't find the treasure, or when the initial group of people who had the crew had left the Spanish galleon and went to go bury it, they split it up. And so there is also this belief that it's possible that the treasure that your great-great-grandfather found was a piece of the entire whole, which is why Norman Island continues to attract people. And then when he brought, I think you have an aunt named Valerie Sims.
Yes.
She has fantastic information.
Yeah, she's the family historian pretty much. And I'm glad you brought up her name because I did want to reference her because she has done enormous, detailed historical research, especially about our family. So this is my dad's cousin's daughter. So let's just call her cousin to make it easy.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, cousin Valerie came in clutch with the information, and she should be acknowledged in multiple ways for the way that she has preserved cultural, you know, competent information about just our life and our stories and just everything. So on her, she has a website. I suggest everybody, if you are interested in this information, definitely check out Valerie's website.
Yeah. We'll put it on the show notes.
Yeah. And so she actually goes into immense detail about what happened, so they say, with the treasure. And it's believed that your great-great-grandfather took the treasure and buried it in Creaky's Alley, located in Main Street. Mm-hmm. Which is really interesting, because if you actually go to Creaky's Alley in Main Street, there is a plaque there that retells this legend. This is not a legend that, you know, Paulina's family came up with one night just for giggles. Like, this is a heavily documented situation that continues to be referenced, you know, even though it's been decades since this occurred. This particular story occurred when the Danish owned the Virgin Islands, and so it was known as the Danish West Indies at that point in time. So we're talking about a long time, and as we have already said before in previous episodes, as time passes, information becomes more and more diluted and shifted and changed in order to satisfy, you know, the curious mind and to just keep the interest flowing. And, you know, it's that human nature of wanting to create a really great story.
Yeah. So a lot of people believe that one. A lot of people believe that the treasure is under there somewhere. And like I said in the story, I had that guy at the bar, like a legit treasure hunter, telling me that he was going to go dive, which made no sense to me, because I was like, why are you diving underneath waterfront? That's something, like, I feel you're going to have to dig up some bricks and search.
Or open up some manhole cover.
Yeah. The alley has a lot of weird history as well. Valerie's mother, actually, had stories she remembered as a little girl hearing voices. And back then, it was a private alley. They would close the gates, and she would hear footsteps and voices speaking in tongues and other languages. And the home that they lived at in Creaky's Alley was very haunted as well. They'd have, like, weird experiences and sightings that they would see in there. Creaky's Alley was a big part of the bedtime stories and our family legends, because so much had happened there. My great-grandparents lived there for many years. My grandfather actually died on Creaky's Alley on his way to see his mother, who he had not spoken to for a very long time. He had suddenly collapsed of a heart attack. My great-grandmother Emily had actually predicted his death through a superstition, an omen, that my grandmother had experienced. But I think I'm going to save those stories for another episode and for my dad to share.
So just to pivot a little bit, because I feel like we've spent a fair amount of time discussing your story, but I really want to focus in on you. You are the visionary behind this podcast. We, of course, cultivated it together and put down the foundations of what it would look like. But in terms of dreaming up this into fruition, it was you that had the initial thought. What went into that thought? And what is some advice that you would give to someone who may be wanting to set out and do something like this, but may not feel the support or may not have the wherewithal?
Yeah, so first off, as far as like the vision goes, a big part of that had to do with one of my favorite podcasts of all time. It's called Spooked by Snap Judgment. It's a great show. And very similar, immersive storytelling. And I always, every time I would listen to it, because I was literally obsessed, I always thought, like, our stories were super cool in the Caribbean. I was like, we have some amazing lore. We have some amazing paranormal encounters. We have amazing paranormal culture and history behind it. And I didn't feel like we were really being represented in the audio fiction or audio drama or audio world at all. And I was thinking, man, I would love to do a podcast. I'd love to. And it just kind of like repeated in my head. And eventually I was like, you know, I have the capabilities. I study music and I'm familiar with digital audio workstations, and I can definitely produce something like this. That was a huge inspiration, that show, to see storytelling compiled in such a way. And I wanted that for us, you know. I wanted that for us in the Caribbean, something that could be ours, our platform to tell. And when I saw your TikToks and your social medias, you were just creating content that was in that realm for me. And also just the way you are with your words and speaking to people. And I'm like, she's someone that would be like a pillar in this project. And so you were an inspiration as well.
Stop, you're making me blush.
Yeah, it's true. I was like, she's just such a pillar about like the community and your focus. And I just felt like we had that commonality where we wanted to represent our, where we're from and our history and our culture. And I think another big factor for me was that people always mistook me. People always thought I didn't have a place in the Caribbean because I don't look, sound, whatever. I experienced a lot of judgment for being different, the way that I would dress. You know, I loved lots of different cultures, fashions and styles, different types of genres and music that were non-Caribbean, watch things that were non-Caribbean. And nowadays, I think it's more acceptable because the world has shrunk a lot since social media has blown up. But I just kind of wanted to be out there and be like, hey, we are much more diverse than you think. And it doesn't mean that we are not part of the Caribbean and that we can't be part of our culture and embrace other cultures and fashions and styles at the same time. So I went on a little rant there. But as far as advice for people that would want to do this, I know it feels like something impossible sometimes, especially coming from a place where you always feel like things have been out of reach for you, or you have a lack of opportunities. Growing up on a small island, that was always a common theme for me. It's like, oh, you can, but, you know, that's in the States. The States have more of those kind of things. You can't do that because we don't have those kind of programs or education or equipment or whatever. But today, it's so different. Today, the sky is the limit, especially with the internet. There is so much education out there. You can educate yourself. There's so much equipment out there that's affordable now that you can grasp. And there's so many resources to use. So I would just say write it out. Just start with that. Just start out writing those ideas.
I completely agree.
It's definitely possible.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that where that was once the reality, where it's just like you don't have very many opportunities here and so you have to go away in order to source those opportunities, I think it's become abundantly clear that, one, there will never be opportunities here if people don't stop to make them themselves. Mm-hmm. And two, in the world of the internet, you have so much information at your fingertips that the excuse of, well, I don't know how, is not an excuse. You know, like, if you want to,
ignorance,
you would.
Ignorance is a choice. Yeah. Ignorance is a choice now.
Exactly. If you want to, you would. And so I would say, what do you want to leave behind? I had somebody ask me this past year, you know, if you were to die tomorrow, what's your legacy? What are you leaving behind? And when you really sit down and think about just the expanse amount of thought that a question like that renders, especially as someone like me who's 28 years old, and I feel like I still haven't even gotten to gasp my first breath of life, you know, like, what am I leaving behind? And are you proud of that? Are you proud of the life that you have led and what you are leaving behind? And it's been a very transformative question, because in every moment when I say yes to something, it's in me thinking, is this a part of the legacy that I would want to leave behind if I was to die today? Which is a really big question to ask yourself regularly. But if you think like that, think about all the things we wouldn't say no to. Or think about all the things we would say no to, because it's just like, my life too short for me to be, you know, dealing with Susie and her mess. And I also wanted to say, just based off of what you were saying earlier about coming to me and seeing my content, I feel like we have been very blessed and that we're very evenly yoked. you have a lot of the audio knowledge that I have no idea about. It took Paulina months of begging me to get a new mic for me to be like, fuck it, fine. Like, I, you know, because in my head, I'm just like, I don't know why it's so important. But it's just like, when you listen back now, I'm like, ah, we need to redo our intro because my voice sounds crazy. But you don't know that. Like, if you are ignorant to it, you don't understand it. You know, it helps to have somebody who has that wherewithal. Whereas, you know, in our part, I feel like we found a really great way in the partnership to make it so that way each person is doing something that they like to do and each person is doing something that's their strength. And for me, it's like the writing. Like, Paulina could put me down to write an email and it takes me 15 minutes to send a long sprawling email to a sponsor, you know.
And that would take me like literally days.
Right. But then Paulina will send me an episode that she's edited and it blows my socks off. So I think that we are a very good example of like a partnership that works. I grew up hearing a partnership is a leaky ship. And so it makes you not want to do anything with other people because it's just like, oh, when you do other things with other people and it ends up being very difficult and convoluted. Mm-hmm. And you have really, this partnership and what we've created here has really inspired me to pursue partnership with someone or people that are, one, aligned with your vision and aligned with your integrity. But also, I think for us, what's really worked is that it's always been friendship first. Which is really weird because this didn't start out, you know, like we said last episode, we weren't really friends when we started this, but I am appreciative that it's friendship first and business second.
I think coming from a place of understanding is big, and the partnership, I agree with you on that because I used to be a solo, you know, I used to be like a loner. I was a creative introvert, so I loved doing everything by myself, doing it all. It really helps to have another perspective, give you some input and ideas, and also check you. I have grown to actually love collaboration and hearing that new ideas and new input. So
I completely agree. And in this, as we close up the year 2022 and we go into 2023, and now is a time when you take stock of all the things that you've accomplished and all of the people that you're grateful for. If I talk too much about it, it'll bring me to tears on this podcast. But the amount of gratitude that we feel for every person that has shared this and have said something nice and have left a review or have tell a friend to tell a friend, like, is so humbling. And it just fuels us to want to keep pulling this forward. And as I say often, you don't have to be here. You don't have to listen to this podcast. You don't have to be engaged with our content, and yet you choose to. And so I just want you to always feel seen and appreciated because we recognize that you are choosing to actively spend an hour with us every single week. And it is so humbling.
It definitely is, you guys. Thank you for everything. And may you have a happy holidays and a happy new year.
Happy holidays. Yes. Have that callaloo for New Year's. And we will see you guys again around February or early March. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Caribbean Mystics Podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to share with your family and friends. Like, follow, and subscribe to keep up with all of our spooky Caribbean content.
Do you have a story you'd like to share that took place in the Caribbean? Email us at CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. That's CaribbeanMysticsPodcast@gmail.com. Or check the show notes for more info.
Caribbean Mystics is created and hosted by Paulina Creaky and Gabrielle Carrard. Theme song is Folktale Juve Rhythm by Umi Marcano.
Sage Sanctuary. This one-of-a-kind metaphysical shop is located on St. Thomas in the Yacht Haven Grand Shopping Plaza. They offer a unique collection of esoteric books, tarot and oracle decks, crystals, incense, apothecary herbs, and mystical resources to support the exploration of the sacred self. The sanctuary is home to multiple mediums, channels, and gifted psychics offering a glimpse into the seen and unseen. Akashic record readings, tarot readings, aura photography, dream interpretation, astrology sessions, various modalities of Reiki, energy healing, and more. Additionally, the sanctuary hosts a community calendar year of magical events, including weekly and monthly hands-on workshops, expert lectures, guided meditations, sound baths, certification classes, and more. Make sure to call Sage Sanctuary today at 340-775-7253 or visit their website at sagesanctuary.com. That's Sage, S-A-J-E, sanctuary.com. This episode of Caribbean Mystics is brought to you by Alexandra Marie Photography for all your life moments. Raw and authentic captures in the unique landscapes of the Virgin Islands. She specializes in weddings, proposals, events, maternity, senior portraits, and family portraits. And the great thing about it is she offers a local discount of $50 off and wedding packages and loyalty discounts for returning clients. She's available to shoot on St. Thomas, St. John, and Water Island. Alexandra Marie Photography. Call 340-690-2062 to book your next shoot or check her website at alexandramariephotography.zenfolio.com.